Hi, welcome to our very first episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast. In this podcast, we're going to talk about every episode of the television show Leverage. You should expect an episode to come out bi-weekly. And our very first one, we got a little excited, so it's kind of long, and we're going to split it up into two episodes. So the idea for this podcast came about because of Twitter, as most things do. I saw a tweet about a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago, by artist Rebecca Mock. And in the tweet, she said something along the lines of she would love to have a podcast about the show Leverage, but all she would talk about would be how the characters in the show created this found family and how wonderful that was. And that tweet really stuck with me, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I decided that I had to make it a thing. I did tweet at Rebecca Mock and ask her if it was okay if I used her idea. She did not get back to me because she is a much more important person than I am. But Rebecca, if you happen to hear this and you're upset that I took your idea, I'm really sorry. And if you want to take over, I will gladly hand over the reins. But alternatively, you have an open standing invitation to be a guest on an episode, because I'd love to hear your take on this show. All right, so without further ado, here is the first half of the pilot of Leverage. It's called The Nigerian Job. Hi, everybody. My name's Christina, and this is today's co-host, Adele Buck, and we're two librarians, and we're here to talk about the show Leverage.
Yes, absolutely. And I am also a former actress, so and you will not find anything under my name, Adele Buck, in any sort of IMDb anything, first of all, because I was an actress long before IMDb, and second of all, Adele Buck is my pen name. I am an author, hopefully to be published within this year or next, who knows, but you know.
That's so exciting. Yes, and I only knew you under your pseudonym, so right. When we were planning this and I found out your name, it was like finding out, well, that's spoiler, I guess, finding out Sophie's name. Just like, what?
Yeah.
That's
perfect.
Like a real name?
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. It sometimes happens. Some people are like, yeah, that's got to be a pseudonym. And I'm like, you know.
We're going to talk about the very first episode, the pilot, which is called The Nigerian Job. It premiered on December 8th, 2008. So this year will be the 10-year anniversary of Leverage starting.
I'm not that old. That is impossible.
I know, it feels impossible, but then when you watch the show and half the people talking on phones are using flip phones, yeah, then you're like, oh, okay, so yeah, about 10 years ago, that feels both not that long ago, but also really long ago.
Yeah,
Like using a flip phone, that just seems,
it's, I don't know. It's funny because, you know, when you, and just to my life, when you're writing contemporary, you know, you've kind of got to future proof yourself a little bit, and I don't get very specific about technology because, you know, I'm assuming people will be texting each other in 5 to 10 years, but I'm not going to be super specific about what it looks like, or, you know, which when you're writing you have that luxury. When you're filming something, you do not. You just have to commit to the time period and go with it.
I was just thinking if I read a book today that was like contemporary and it didn't have anything else that set it in a contemporary place, like didn't like specify what year it was. But then if the author dropped in like, and they were chatting on AOL Instant Messenger, I'd be like, oh, just shut that down. That's not, yeah. So yeah, there are some things that I found like rewatching this episode and other episodes that did not age very well, like the flip phones, and in this first episode, they use a fax machine.
Right.
Yes. Well, you know, I use fax machines from time to time. Yeah, but it's becoming more and more rare. But then other things still felt like really current and relevant. There are a lot of things that haven't changed so much, or they seem so high tech when they were using them on the show that it's aged really well.
Well, and they were very good at future-proofing it, or looking at modern their modern technology and pushing it to its edge, you know, the earbuds and in the hospital scene, they were, you know, one of the phones they had, you know, was a smartphone with a camera, and he could rock up a document on it.
Yeah. It was great, though, that it didn't have a...
A front-facing camera.
It didn't have a front-facing camera, so he's... And he didn't get Parker to take the picture of him. But, okay, so we should probably go through the episode.
Yes!
Because that's about halfway through right there. So, like I said, this episode's called The Nigerian Job. It was directed by Dean Devlin, who wrote Stargate and Independence Day. And this was his directorial debut, this episode of this show. He'd never directed anything. It was created and written, like co-written this episode anyways, by John Rogers and Chris Downey. So John Rogers sadly also wrote the movies The Core and The Halle Berry Catwoman.
Oh dear.
But we will not hold that against him because he brought us this show, and he also brought us the trilogy of TV movies that are very important, The Librarians.
Librarians, which I can't.
And then the TV show, The Librarians.
I can't get through the movies. I enjoy the TV show, but I enjoy when people are specialists. I don't.
Yeah.
The whole being a generalist thing and still being, you know, good at everything. Sorry, Swiss Army Knives are minimally competent at a lot of things. That's what knives do.
Yeah, I think that's where the show kind of takes on that idea and like makes it better.
Yeah.
But I mean, I know when that first movie came out though, I was like, this is ridiculous and I love it so much.
Well, and that's what the two shows, just to bring it back into theme, the two shows have that in common is they've, I mean, I think, I'm not sure if John Rogers actually coined the term competence porn, but
yeah, I've heard competence kink.
The first person I heard use that term and used in reference to Leverage and how everybody had their specific thing that they were really good at, and watching somebody do something that they're really good at is really fun.
Yeah, Parker even said something about that at the end, like not to spoil the end of the episode. I hope you've watched the first episode if you're listening to this.
Right.
She says, you know, she's like, I do this one thing and I do it really well, but you know more things.
Yeah.
And I'm not just going to stop doing my thing.
Right.
So,
but I have stuff to learn is essentially the subtext.
Yeah. And like, you
really
be better,
you know, don't need to give a spoiler alert for a 10-year-old television show.
Yeah. Right. No, we've reached that statute of limitations.
Yeah. Yes,
so, okay. Chris Downey, he's the co-creator. He also wrote episodes of King of Queens and Suits, which I feel is topical because of Meghan Markle. I don't know. And it's a show that I've never seen. So, do you want to just like walk through kind of the plot of the episode?
Well,
which we could do for like 3 hours, I think.
We could. I mean, it's a 44-minute television show, but yeah.
And actually, this one is 56 minutes because it was an extended pilot with no commercials.
Mm-hmm. I think my husband and I might have watched it like 4 or 5 times.
Just waiting for the next
another episode because we really liked it. Oh, and let me, by the way, also plug an earlier television show, which sadly you can't get on like Netflix or anything like that. You can get it on DVD, and it's the Nero Wolfe Mysteries.
Yes.
And it is like, if you are a fan of Leverage, and if you are a fan of Miss Fisher, this is the streams converging, because it has all of the smarts and competence of Leverage, and it has all of the historical costume, set, car porn of Fisher. But it stars Timothy Hutton. And Maury Chaykin. And it has, oh gosh, who's the guy who plays?
Saul Rubinek.
Saul Rubinetti is a regular in it.
Yeah.
And for spoiler alert, later seasons, when you meet Nate's ex-wife, she's played by Kari Matchett, who is also a regular in Nero Wolfe Mysteries. So it's really, really great. So that's a kind of a side. But also, if you see it, it also kind of informs some of the choices they made on Leverage, because John Rogers and the crew were also fans of that show.
To kind of see like, they like take flavors and things from it to put in their Leverage stew.
A little DNA in there. So that's interesting.
I like that. I like seeing like where creators get kind of their inspiration. Not, they're not straight up hijacking things from that and putting them in, except half the actors apparently. But you know, definitely like where they're influenced and how they bring that into their other works.
Yeah, it's just a lot of fun. So, you know, of course I've seen this episode at least 10 times and saw it again last night for the first time in several years. And the first line of this show is, your airport shuttle is in 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. So it's they're already just tight writing keys to the theme of aviation.
Yeah, right there, which I don't think I caught until I watched it again yesterday.
Same.
And I was like, oh my gosh, he's in an airport. No, he's not in the airport yet, but he's there. So yeah, it's like laying that kind of subconscious groundwork.
Expectations, yeah. So it's right there in the first line. The other thing I loved about rewatching this with a view to having seen all five seasons and is that all the visual hallmarks are already there in the pilot. You know, there's the quick pans, the lower high angles, there's just sort of the shaky cam takes and emotional. Mm-hmm.
And like circular ones.
The circular ones, yeah. So, you know, but those sort of whip pans where they like whoosh and stop.
Yeah.
It was all there from the first episode, which, you know, so many times, and you know, you and I talked about this before we started recording, so many times it takes a show a long time to find its feet, you know, or at least a few episodes. And then, mm-hmm. then you start seeing the show that you're going to be watching. And this was the show that it was going to be from the very first moment.
Yeah. It almost could, like, this could have just been like an hour long movie and then yeah. It would be like perfect. You'd want to know what happens to the characters later, but it's so perfectly contained. It's so like, it's already done. It's not in like a workshop phase at all. Which exactly. when I figured out that this was Dean Devlin's like first time to direct something that went on television, like that blows my mind. In the audio commentary for the episode, he talks about his choices for camera and stuff, and he said, I wanted to lay this foundation. I wanted this because he's, you know, it could be a shaky cam, it could be a steady cam, like fixed point or moving around. And he's like, I wanted to have all of those techniques in the first one so that they could be used all the way through and it wouldn't be jarring in the next episode if they decided to use like a different way of doing things.
Right.
Which is someone who has not studied film outside of having an RTVF major for a roommate in college and just being a fan of watching movies. I was like, oh yes, of course. That's fascinating. I knew that. Yes, that makes total sense.
Well, the thing is that, you know, so many things are, you know, people who just, you know, most people who just watch stuff and just watching, there's nothing wrong with just watching stuff. It's hard to convey how many things are specific choices. And, you know, you kind of take some take a lot of stuff, you know, even I, just if I'm sitting back, you know, I've studied this stuff for a long time and, you know, then not studied it for a long time, but certainly observed it for a long time. And then, you know, you can be kind of in absorb mode. But when you're actually looking at it and you know, sort of examining what the choices are, for instance, a couple things. First of all, there's a moment where Elliot is really suspicious and he's basically like, you know, he has one of his classic early, this is why I work alone kind of lines. Yeah. And practically the next line he says, hey, knock it off. We know what we're doing. Not I. Mm-hmm. He's already subconsciously incorporating himself into the team, but that's the choice in the writer's room.
Yeah.
Use we instead of I.
So like we mentioned earlier, we open in the hotel bar and we have Nate. And I think that really does frame Nate's kind of underlying problem that he is a functioning or not functioning, as the episodes go, alcoholic throughout the whole kind of series. And he deals with that in different ways every season. And he is approached by this man who is Saul Rubinek, and who was in the Nero Wolfe mystery, but mm-hmm. he's Artie from Warehouse 13.
He's everything.
He is in everything. Like,
he is in everything.
An episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation. He was in like L.A. L.A. Law. He was in.
He's a working actor who's just just been.
He's one of those guys. Oh, that guy.
Yeah, exactly. He's the kind of guy you look at and you think this is probably somebody. One of the reasons why this guy works all the time is he's probably really great to work with.
Oh yeah,
is my guess, because he's just got this very kind of just super nice guy looking.
I know. This episode aside.
Yeah, this episode.
He's one of those people, like those actors who like they can play a complete creep, but you're like, but I bet in real life they're real nice. Like,
exactly.
I would totally have a beer with that guy.
Yeah.
He's talking to Nate, and Nate is played, of course, by Timothy Hutton, until Leverage that I can ever think of when I see Timothy Hutton was his character in French Kiss, which I love that movie with Meg Ryan and Kevin Kline.
I've seen it, but I haven't seen it in years.
Oh my gosh. So he's Meg Ryan's fiance, and she's an American and he's Canadian, and she's going through her citizenship to become a Canadian so they can get married and have this perfect life together. And he goes on a doctor's convention in France, and there he finds a French woman and promptly dumps her over the phone.
Okay.
And so she overcomes her fear of flying and goes to France to win him back. And it doesn't work out because Kevin Kline's there and he has a French accent and a mustache.
Yes. And a diamond necklace.
He's a thief. So
so it's perfect.
But yeah, no, I've always had this like the taste in my mouth about Timothy Hutton because he was a jerk to Meg Ryan.
Fair enough.
But yeah. But then now he's fine. He's fine with me. So Saul Rubinek's character is Victor Dubenich. And there's a line later. They're like, how many Victors have you ever met in real life?
Right.
And then Elliot's the only one who can come up with a Victor. And it's some like tiny Chinese border town.
Yes. And of course, Sophie's been there too.
Right. Yeah. And then Nate has that little smile. Okay. So Victor Dubenich sits down and he says, hey, I need your help. My plans for this plane have been stolen, and I have this meeting with my board of directors, or not board of
shareholder meeting, but it looks a lot more like a board meeting when it actually happens, by the way. So
okay. I don't know how either of those would look in real life, so
I both.
Okay, good. I'm glad you're here to offer authenticity in these places. Yeah. Then they have like a nice party outside. And Nate says, you know, I don't steal things. That's not my job.
Right.
And you find out that Nate used to work for an insurance company and he got back stolen objects. So he stole things back that had been stolen, which is a real job, apparently.
It is,
at least according to one mystery book I read one time. And the show.
And also the Thomas Crown Affair.
Yes. Oh, I haven't seen the Thomas Crown Affair in ages. But might have been one of the first reasons I got into heists and like movies like that.
So
he is trying to get Nate to help him, and he tells him that he's got a crew of people who are actually also good at stealing things, and he needs him to kind of control them and plan
the one honest man to oversee them.
Yeah, the White Knight to become the Black King, which is a fun thing that comes up several times. And then it like cuts, which in the audio commentary, they talk about, they wanted to have, like, there are two types of pilots. There's like a premise pilot where you kind of learn about what the characters are doing, like who they are and why they're going to do this thing. And then there's a workplace pilot where they're actually doing their job.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to do both in this pilot. So you get the cutscenes between Dubenich and Nate talking about what the job is, cut over to them actually doing the job. So them splitting up to go, somehow they get to the roof of this building that later.
Yes, you do.
You know, like you do.
Can't wait.
and Nate's on the other side kind of monitoring things, and he's got the diagrams, the specs of the building projected up on the wall.
Which is another kind of iconic thing for them, is to have sort of the high tech monitoring, sort of the Ocean's 11E.
Yeah.
You know, sort of spinning a building around and, you know, looking at its innards without actually being in the building.
Yeah. I love that. And then we get to meet the well, like 3/5 of the crew for the first time.
So basically, we get introduced to Parker, who is a thief, a master thief, and she is also not quite right in her head.
Right. Very much.
Partisan, who is a hacker, a master hacker, and who is also just a personality plus. Love him so much.
Aldous Hodge is one of my favorite people in the whole wide world.
Isn't he, though? Oh, God. And then we have Elliot Spencer, played by the lovely Christian Kane, who is also on Angel, amongst other things. And they bill him as a retrieval specialist. Basically, what that means is that he scares the crap out of people, either physically or just through pure intimidation, and gets things back. So he's in the parlance, the marketing parlance, it was, he's the hitter. Of course, Aldous Hodge's character is the hacker. Parker is the thief, and we have yet to meet the grifter. And then we have the mastermind, who's Timothy Hutton.
Yes. I think in the future, I'm going to ask people like who they would be in a crew like this. And mine would be, I'd be the person being screwed over. Or the person who was screwed over that they have to help. Like, I'm like, there's no way I could be in this crew.
Yeah, I'd have a hard time. I think the closest I would come would be the grifter, but I don't, my brain doesn't double back.
Yeah, no, I don't think I can think on two levels, because the grifter has to think on like, I'm this character and I'm going to be this character to who I'm talking to, but also like, I'm really me and this is what I want to get out of that person.
I could do the character thing. What I couldn't do necessarily is the psychological assessment required to figure out what that other person's weaknesses are and how to exploit them.
Yeah. Okay, so but we haven't met that grifter yet, so we're gonna get to her in a little bit. So we meet them, we get to have these really fun flashbacks that really tell us a lot about their characters. So Hardison has stolen Mick Jagger's identity to get a penthouse suite or whatever, and he's partying with some slave Leia girls and a belly dancer. Elliot's just drinking a cup of coffee in a Serbian bar, and it cuts away, and then it comes back, and everybody's on the ground.
There's a massive shootout.
And
then it comes back, and he's like,
he's still drinking the coffee. And he retrieves the thing, and then he just smiles.
He gets passed off a vintage baseball card.
And I love that in this first episode, he's wearing his glasses most of the time. Like, he doesn't wear them a lot. Like, he off and on, he'll wear them in the future, but I feel like that was a very specific thing that they chose for his character in this episode, because when you first see him and Hardison interact, he's mocking Hardison for giving them better tech.
Right.
And Hardison's like, what do you even do, man? Like, I know what I'm here to do. And he's like, he doesn't say anything. And then later, you find out what he does. And then Parker's is like the saddest, but the funniest flashback.
Yeah.
Because she's with some sort of parental figures who are, one of whom is crying and the other one is yelling at her for trying to get her bunny rabbit toy back. And he tells her, you're not gonna get this back until you do what I tell you to do or become a better thief. And so she blows the house up.
Yes. And hugs her bunny and walks away.
And hugs her bunny and walks away, which tells you a lot about Parker, just like in like 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm. All of those scenes are very economical.
Yeah. In the commentary, the creators are like, so in a lot of the message boards, people were upset because they're like, Parker killed her parents. But the way we think about it, like their headcanon basically for the characters they created, so I guess that makes it real, is that those were foster parents and she made sure they were out of the house before she blew it up.
Yeah, I think I saw that somewhere at one point.
Which makes her a little less of a sociopath.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we meet them. Then Parker dives off the roof of the building.
And also, from the get-go, we have that Hardison is very attracted to her.
Oh, yeah.
Not in a creepy way. Mm-mm. But he's just sort of like, whoa.
I know. He's like, you can have the whole box. But then he doesn't follow that up with anything else, you know?
His crush is very sweet.
Yes. She dives off. She dives off the roof, which leads to the best quote and description of Parker, which is when Elliot says, that's 20 pounds of crazy in a 5-pound bag.
Yes.
He's like, So Christian Kane was born in Dallas, but he grew up in like Norman, Oklahoma. So it's like that very like Northern Texas, Oklahoma accent, which is...
With a very New England turn of phrase.
Because, oh, really?
Rogers is from Boston.
That's true. Yeah, because I was like, I've never heard that, but it sounds like something that Christian King.
Oh, no, I grew up in New England. I grew up in New England, and the usual quote is, I won't do the whole thing, because the real quote is, it is to define a thing called a blivet.
Okay.
And a blivet is 20 pounds of you know what in a 5-pound bag. So you can imagine something splitting at the seam. Yeah. So yeah, that's a total New Englandism, which is, you know,
okay.
When I heard that and I knew John Rogers from Boston, I was like, well, this makes sense.
All right. Okay. Cause I just assumed that was just something that Elliot would just make up. Cause in the South, we make up weird things for people to say. Okay. No, I love that.
New Englandism.
And that, like, is there a better way to describe Parker?
Probably not. No.
No. And that is, that's like a recurring thing. I think he says it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Later in the season, at least once later in the series.
Yeah.
So yeah. So Parker is hanging upside down, and which they actually did that on site. So they're on top of this 40-story building, and she's upside down.
Yeah.
And the wind is crazy because they're filming this in Chicago.
Right.
And they're like, who knew it would be so windy in Chicago?
Who knew? Right. Oh, yeah. Gosh. I'm so afraid of heights. I would have been like, I'm sorry, I quit.
Yeah. Apparently, so Beth Riesgraf, who plays Parker, was nervous at first. And they were like, oh, no, you're the actress. We'll take care of you. We'll make sure everything's safe and secure. And they got up on the roof, and John Rogers is like hugging a strut and like crying. And she's like, oh, this is great. And she's like skipping along the edge of the building. So she was great once, you know, I guess she was in character. So she's hanging upside down, and she cuts a hole into the window and like acrobatically dives in, which I don't understand.
Her stunt double, I don't either, but her stunt double is amazing.
Yeah. Like the control of that little cartwheel she does on the desk.
Yeah.
And then she catches the pencil before it falls.
Yes.
She's so pleased. I love that. Like, so there's the competency porn aspect of the show, but then there's also like people loving what they do,
mm-hmm.
whether or not it's on the right side of the law. Like, if you love what you do, like, I'm a big fan. Like, it doesn't matter what you're doing. But yeah, so she's just like tickled that she caught that pencil. She's so proud.
Yes.
And then the heist really begins. She hotwires the elevators for the boys, and they get down to the R&D server closet. And Hardison does his thing.
Yeah, Hardison does his thing. But before that, by the way, so one of the things that, you know, you talked about people being good at their jobs and enjoying what they do, which is really, really fun to watch. But the other thing is watching them learn. So, for instance, they're talking, Parker and Nate are talking about the guards, and mm-hmm. heard them milling around, and she can't get a read on how many there are. And he just barks out, yeah, haircuts, Parker, count the haircuts. And she's like, I would have missed that. And her motivation that she's not perfect, but then followed up by that kind of like little, I've got stuff I could learn from this guy, and how cool is that?
Yeah.
You know, that's
from someone who's like never worked with somebody else. Well, as far as you know, at this point.
Right. Or somebody who's worked on her own for a very long time.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't get to that level of proficiency in anything without working with people.
Yeah.
When you're young, at least. But yeah, it's so I love that little moment of like, wait, I'm really amazing at what I do, but I could be even better.
Yeah, no, you're right. I really love that kind of realization she has. And that Nate thinks like 12 steps ahead all the time,
mm-hmm.
because they realize that 4 of the guards aren't in the guard booth or in the,
because
watching the monitors. And he's like, it's because of the playoffs.
Yeah.
They're doing everything early because they want to watch the playoffs. And everyone's like,
of course.
Of course. You know, like if I was planning a heist, I would not take into account basketball playoffs, because that sounds something that interests me. And I don't know if it interests Nate, but he's one of those people that, you know, he just has he has like a generalized knowledge of like most things, so he can work those into his plans.
Right.
But yeah, so the guys get down to the R&D servers, and Hardison's got his code breaker thing in there, and it's a 10 decimal code. And if you watch when it's when he's done, the first 7 numbers are 8675309.
Of course they are. And this is when we get to see Elliot do his thing. Yes. So we have this wonderful scene where the guards come out and they catch Hardison. Hardison's hands go up in the air. He's got a duffel bag in one hand. It starts to drop from his fingers. And before it can fully hit the floor, Elliot comes in and disables every guard, all four guards, boom, 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 boom. And here's where we mentioned, by the way, that John Rogers used to work with Jackie Chan.
Oh.
So, yes, yes. He did all of the Jackie Chan, he wrote all of the Jackie Chan animated series. And so Jackie Chan was his hero. So he got to work with his hero and he got to learn about fight staging. Mm-hmm. From Jackie Chan. So a lot of this is very apparently influenced by that experience in his life. And that's when we get the great scene where Elliot takes the clip out of the gun, tosses clip in one direction, gun in the other direction, goes, that's what I do. And we're also introduced to the character aspect of Elliot, which is he doesn't like guns.
Doesn't like guns.
If all possible, he is going to avoid firing a gun.
I love that. Because I think that's such a go-to easy thing for like the strong, you know, kind of badass character is to have them, they've got their trunk full of guns, you know.
Well, there's that iconic moment in the first Indiana Jones movie where the guy comes out with, you know, the big, you know, he's about 9 feet tall and, you know, flailing a huge sword. And Indiana Jones looks, you know, alarmed for a minute and then just kind of goes, wait, what? Pulls the gun out, pulls the guy away.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a flip on that.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And I love, like, the look on Hardison's face after he's done is like, I am so impressed and like a little turned on. Like, so I should like state now that I like low key, high key ship Hardison, Elliot, and Parker. Like, I just love the three of them. What?
The OTP three.
Yeah, they're my OT three. And I just love them because, you know, Hardison's like, oh, okay. And then Elliot like gives that little smile. Like, it's not even like a smug smirk. He's just like, yeah, I did that.
Yeah, me. It may, yeah.
Yeah, and then that's cut because they get into the room and Hardison steals all the files, downloads them all, and then drops a ton of viruses, and then they leave.
Mm-hmm.
But then they can't get out because when the guards realized somebody had infiltrated the top floors, they shut down roof access. So they've got to get out some other way. And their immediate reaction is, okay, every man for themselves. Like,
right.
I work alone, like, I don't care about you guys. And Parker's in the, you know, still up there. She's like, yeah, but I have a way out. And Nate says, yeah, but I have a plan.
Right.
And they all have to shut up and listen. So he's like, okay, we're going to do this one. We're going to do the burn scam. And they're like, okay, it's plan B. He's like, actually, this is plan G.
Right.
Plan B, Hardison dies.
Right.
And then they're in the elevator and they do a quick change.
And the boys look away when she strips her shirt off and it's
and
adorable.
I love that. That's so sweet. And no one says anything. Like,
nope. They're just like, whoa, okay.
And she's just so like, oh, whatever, that she's doesn't even think about it. And but they're like, they're gentlemen. And in the commentary, they're like, this is like the sexiest it gets on our show. This is like one of the two sexy scenes ever. We're a very monastic show.
We're, yeah.
Which is just adorable. And then they also say like, this is the burn scam where if you don't want someone to look at you, you make it socially awkward for them to look at you. So they put on like a fake burn on her face and she's got a brace and crutches. I'm guessing it's a burn that they put on her.
Yeah. It was
some sort of disfiguration.
Yeah.
And they hobble out and then Elliot gets to yell at the security guard. We're like, yeah. Take a little, like, you know, take a picture. It'll last longer.
Right. Basically. And also another little touch that when Parker tosses her crutch away, who does she toss it to? She tosses
Hardison, and he catches it without even looking.
Exactly.
Like, they're already in sync like that.
Yeah, exactly. So there's all these little choices that show that even though what they're saying, because there's always text and then there's subtext. And the text is, I work alone. I don't need any of you people. And the subtext is, first of all, they're having time of their life.
Yeah.
And second of all, they're instinctively working well together. It's like for instance, when I said earlier, when Elliot said, we know what we're doing, you know, he didn't say, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And we know what we're doing.
Yeah. They like that instant, like it's, well, I'm going to use it again later, but that's like this instant chemistry between them, whether or not you ship an OT3, but like they work really well as a unit because they're each specialized in those different things.
Right.
And right now, because there's the three of them working with Nate helping, like they're like a tripod, like so one of them without the others would fall over, but since they've got the three, they can like lean on each other and be like a stable unit.
Right.
So then they leave and they meet up again kind of in an outdoor park area in the dark, which I think is important for the end of the episode, that this is in the dark. And they are transferring the files to Dubenich, but it takes a while because Hardison has to find good Wi-Fi, which is such a real thing. And then they're like, all right, well, the money will be in our accounts by the morning and I'll never see any of y'all again. Elliot says, like Parker says, I've already forgotten your names. And then they take off in their four cardinal directions, I guess. But they always like, they cross each other.
Right. Yeah, they stopped doing that after a few seasons, but they didn't. I think they might have done it at the very last episode again.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
the last. I need to do this podcast all the way through to the end of the series because that last episode. Okay. they leave. They're never going to see each other again. But the next morning, Nate super hungover in, I'm guessing, a hotel room because that was a horrible, horrible room.
Yeah.
Ugly bed. But there he has the little tiny liquor bottles from a mini bar. So I'm guessing it's the hotel room. And it's Dubenich losing his mind, telling him that he screwed him over. He never got the files.
Right.
And telling him to meet him in an abandoned airplane hangar.
Yeah.
Like warehouse. Like,
yeah.
Oh, okay. Not shady. Not shady at all.
So,
but I'm guessing that at that point, Nate is so groggy and out of it. And half expecting to be screwed over by all these thieves and criminals that he's like, okay, whatever. So he shows up. Hardison and Elliot are already there, and Hardison has a gun pulled on Elliot, who does not look worried at all. He's got this gun pointed at him, and they're, you know, yelling, oh, you screwed me over, you must have stolen the drive when we were in the elevator, and no, you're the one who sent it, you must have done it. And then Nate disarms him because they trick him into thinking the safety's on, which is great.
Which is classic. And by the way, and then of course Parker shows up and she's also got a gun and she's sort of slinking around in her best I am really very off-putting manner. But what you might not have noticed, which I again noticed this for the very first time watching this episode for the zillionth time, is that the three of them, not Nate, but the other three, are dressed all in black and royal blue.
Ooh.
Nate is dressed in black and either black or black and gray. It's kind of hard to tell. So it's like, again, they're a team already.
Yeah.
And Nate is still, he's thematically in with the black, but not with the blue.
Hmm.
So
take Which is interesting because that feels like very much the color tone of large parts of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like that scene, like they're in the warehouse, there's lots of like grayish blues and dark blacks and things. The cover of the whole CD, the DVDs for the first season, like that's the color scheme is dark blue and black.
Right.
So yeah, I like thinking that that's symbolism they've brought all the way through. But that's really cool. I never noticed that.
Yeah, but again, I mean, costume design is also a series of choices, and you're not just thinking about individual characters. You're thinking about what is going to sort of enhance the mood or the look or the theme of the episode as a whole or this particular scene. So people tend to think about costume design more as like what do individual characters wear.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot more than that. And you can signify people being at odds with each other by putting them in very different colors or very different styles.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can signify that they're actually on the same page as they do in the scene, even though they're screaming at each other and pointing guns at each other. They're on the same page. And so then they figure out that, oh crap, this is a trap. And another one of my favorite little moments is that as they're running out of the warehouse, Hardison stumbles and falls, and Elliot stops and picks him up and basically shoves him forward. Like, you know,
I love that scene. And also, like, Nate is holding the door, like he's pushing the door up so they can all get out a little more quickly, and he lags behind, like he waits to make sure they've all gotten out ahead of him.
Right.
Where he was like, I think at one point he was ahead of Parker even when they were running.
Mm-hmm. But he got to the door first to open it.
Yeah. And they're all like just, you know, sliding underneath the door. And then you have that great cliffhanger where the building explodes and you know that Parker, Hardison, and Elliot got out, but you don't see Nate.
Yeah.
And then obviously where you come back from commercial break and Nate like wakes up. Both of those scenes, like both commercial break, comebacks from commercial break. I don't know. He's waking up. Out of a deep sleep. and they're in the hospital, and he is handcuffed to a hospital bed.
As one does.
Exactly. I can't tell you the amount of times I've woken up in that exact situation.
I think this is a really great place to end our first episode. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back with the rest of our conversation in 2 weeks. In the meantime, you can follow Adele on Twitter at @AdeleBuck. She's also on Instagram under that name. You can follow me on Twitter at @LibrarianStee, Stee as in Christina. And you can follow the inspiration for this podcast, New York Times bestselling artist, graphic novel artist, illustrator, gift maker, Rebecca Mock at Rebecca Mock. Her Tumblr is also Rebecca Mock. .tumblr.com. You should really check out her work. She is amazing. All right, we'll see you next time.